My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello and welcome to Unheard. I'm Freddie Sayers. Unless you've been in hiding for the past week and steering clear of the internet, which, by the way, is probably a good idea, you will know about the Pentagon leaks. Yes, this is the story of the 21-year-old member of the Air National Guard who was accused of basically leaking huge caches of top secret documents via a private Discord server. They contained all of this sensitive information about mainly the war in Ukraine, which has made front page news around the world. He was then arrested in a typically televised helicopter-led sting operation and is now facing charges. The whole story seems like a parable containing within it all of the components, or at least many of them, of the weird, fragile modern world and the internet's role in that. We really wanted to unpack it and try to understand what we can learn from it and what it means for the future. And happily, we are joined by the perfect person to do that with. He is a former CIA analyst, so he knows his onions on this topic. He was an analyst of global media. He served in the National Intelligence Open Source Center. He has lived under, well, right-wing and left-wing dictators. He was born in Cuba before coming to the US and really becoming a star with his first book, which was called The Revolt of the Public and the Crisis of Authority, in which he pretty much predicted a lot of the ructions of the past few years, including, you could say, Brexit and Donald Trump. His name is Martin Gurry, and he joins us live from the East Coast. Hi, Martin.
Hello, hello. Happy to be here.
So I really want to try to use this strange, very American, very dramatic story of these CIA leaks via this young man, Jack Teixeira, as a bit of a way in to some of the themes that you have really made your own in recent years. What's your initial take on it? What was the first thing that you thought witnessing that whole story unfold?
Well, I mean, my thought was, well, of course this is going to happen. This has happened before and it will happen again, probably progressively more so. It really was, I'm glad you called it a particularly American scenario, because it was really like something out of Hollywood. This 21-year-old kid who, for reasons unbeknownst to anyone, has been given a top secret clearance. That's supposed to be, I mean, I was at CIA. CIA, you get the highest clearance there is, right? Code worded and all that kind of stuff. But you know, the thought is you graduate that ability to access classified material by need. And this guy is a young guy, and as you say, a National Guard. what need does this man have to get at it? But the system is such that, and I think it's a great big old-fashioned institution, is such that if you want to be heard inside the classified world, you have to classify things. And I was working, of course, in the unclassified side of CIA, the open media side of CIA. And it was like, you know, knocking on a door that wouldn't open, because why should I listen to you? You're not top secret, right? The fact that it was the best information around, okay, just seemed to not penetrate. So everything is over classified, because my stuff that I'm writing about is super classified because it's super important and everybody needs to see it. So there's a gigantic overabundance of top secret material and confidential and so forth.
So it's almost like a kind of status symbol within the intelligence services or within the military. If you're working on classified information, that kind of makes you a big deal. Is that what you're saying?
It's absolutely a status symbol and a sign of your heft in this world. If you are classified confidential, people are going to say, well, who cares, right? Classified secret, you kind of go, well, that might be interesting. Top secret, I got to read this one, you know. So and of course, it was my experience in all the years I was there that the interesting stuff was not even secret, not classified at all. It was coming out in the open world. And once the internet hit, of course, that was massively true. So it was a combination of that and then this new generation. I mean, the problem is we have these institutions that essentially are 20th century institutions that believe in all these steep hierarchical things like how you classify information and where you stand inside the organization. And you have this kid who's a Zoomer, basically. The Zoomer generation is one of the great mysteries of anthropology right now, okay? And he has access to all this material. And as opposed to most people who used to leak, who are either being paid by somebody or have usually an ideological axe to grind, or they think that they're saving America from making these terrible mistakes. This guy just might look cool with his friends on Discord, as far as I can tell, right? So so now we're dealing with a situation where there's too much classification, too many tens of thousands, maybe more, that are given access to that classification, and many, many more reasons for leaking that stuff.
Just to dig into this individual first, you said it was a Discord server. It was more than that, because I'm reading out here. He had a profile on the gaming marketplace Steam, which showed him playing all of these first-person shooters and military simulations with millions of other players. There's a military shooter called Arma 3, a hardcore survival game called Project Zomboid, and the battle royale shooter PUBG Battlegrounds. I've probably mispronounced that. I'm going to get corrected in the comments. But not only is he, as you say, a Zoomer, a Generation Z, he's kind of coming from, evidently, years of playing simulated battles in computer games. And then he joins the real military, or a wing of it. And perhaps in his head, it's all just part of the same semi-real world.
No, that's 100% true. People of my generation, I'm looking at you, and I'm not sure about your generation, but certainly boomers, Gen Xers, some millennials, they make that sharp distinction. Is it real or is it virtual, right? Young people today do not make that distinction. It's not that they say that the virtual is real or the real is virtual. It's the same thing. It's the same thing to them. I think the average length of time online is something like 7 hours per day or something. So it's just a gigantic amount. So there's a lot of reality to that, and a lot of unreality to that. They go to the real world and they encounter, some reality there, but a lot of unreality in the real world as it exists right now. So then they do not make that distinction. They float back and forth, and it's the same seamless world to them.
And in particular, I believe the military was actually recruiting on Discord and on some of these channels that this guy was playing on. So there's a kind of, it's predestined to happen in a way, because the kind of kids who might be interested in joining the military are probably the ones who are going to be playing military computer games and hanging out in these forums. So it's just a weird moment of, as you say, virtual meets reality, and really with a bump.
Yeah, the kind of kids that the military really wants are probably playing baseball with their dads in Iowa somewhere, right? You go into Discord and you're going to get this kind of person, very typical Zoomer, but not necessarily the kind of person the military wants. The problem there is our institutions, and that's not peculiarly American, have no clue how to deal with this this world of the web and the young people that make no distinction between virtual and real.
Yeah, so I want to come on to that bigger question of like how we cope in this environment. But just to finish on the Teixeira case, where do your sympathies lie? Because the reaction to it has almost been as interesting as the event itself. You've had some kind of right of center commentators. I'm thinking of Tucker Carlson and his group, who are pretty much defending this kid, saying, you know, he's exposed important secrets. I know Glenn Greenwald was saying the same thing. And that's a sort of interesting point of view that some people are taking, that actually the whole kind of heavy force of the law coming down on him is over the top. And in a way, we should know about these things anyway. Whilst it seems, at least from where I'm sitting, that the majority of opinion, at least establishment opinion, is very condemning of this kid and really wants to pretty much make an example of him. Hence that very theatrical arrest and no doubt imprisonment to come. Where do you stand? Who's the bad guy here?
I guess the bare bones reaction for me is I swore that oath. All right. It's pretty damn clear what you're supposed to do and not do. And if you leak documents, you are breaking the law and you're hurting your country. So that is where I stand on that. Then you start to qualify. OK. And to just take away your feelings and look at this as some sort of like petri dish in which something is incubating and you're watching this very interesting development. Right. This 21-year-old kid, I am fairly certain, had no clue what that oath meant. You know, they come from a generation where those kind of, you know, the words and concepts of you know, honorable commitment to silence or something like that take a vast second place to, you know, I want to share this with my crowd, you know, and get some status. And then you have not just the government establishment, which I guess has a right to be angry because its prerogatives have been trampled on, but the American mass media, which rejoiced. I mean, when I was inside the agency, I mean, secrets would leak out, and the media would publish them, and they considered to be major journalistic triumphs. But the media was actually hunting this kid, you know, trying to figure out who it was that the leaker was. And Bellingcat and the New York Times were engaged in some sort of, you know...
collaboration?
Yeah, collaboration to snatch this villain who was leaking American secrets. When has that happened? That I think, is possibly the most interesting aspect of this entire story. The rest of it played out the way things play out in this town of Washington. But that to me was a measure of how far the mass media and the establishment of the United States, the elites of the United States, are shoulder to shoulder saying, we got to control the information environment.
What you're edging up against there is, which is something we've talked a lot about and heard a lot about in recent months and years, which is, as you put it, the knitting together of agents of the government with agents of the establishment media. We had it in the Twitter files. We certainly witnessed it over COVID, where, you know, here in the UK, the BBC was pretty much acting as the health and safety arm of the government, just repeating health and safety messages every day. Do you think, how should we understand that, do you think, in this context? Is it somehow a response to the chaos of the internet?
I mean, I think what it is a response, a reaction. It's a reactionary move, okay? It is trying to turn back the clock. The elites in the 20th century had it good. I mean, basically, you control your pot of information. If you were the government, you had great influence over other elites in the media, for example, and what they were putting out. And that has completely blown up by what I call the digital tsunami. You know, this gigantic amount of information that cannot possibly be controlled.
What I think is so interesting about what you're saying is that actually, these clamping downs on freedom, this new sense that freedom is actually in recession, is a reaction to too much freedom, or as perceived by the elites, as you call them, that there was this kind of moment of promise when the internet arrived, that it was going to be this new world of free information and an expression. And actually, what we're getting to is the opposite happening, because the people in power, whether they are governments or their kind of agents and friends, don't like it because it makes it hard to govern, or you, more cynically, you could say it exposes embarrassments too readily. So they're almost trying to put the genie back in the bottle. Do you see it that way?
Yes. It's a question whether that genie can ever be put back in the bottle. And if you put me to the wall, I would say, no, it cannot. There's too much information out there. Yeah, I think the elites, and by that I mean the people who run our institutions, and that government is one, politics, of course, another, the media is another, but the scientific establishment that we saw so much of during the heyday of COVID, business, entertainment business, all these people have used to have pretty much the stage to themselves. And it's not so much that it's difficult to govern, because I think you govern in the world that you're given, right? I mean, why would you want to govern on a 20th century basis in the 21st century with the digital environment already upon you? You have to govern digitally, right? You have to have facility with that. The only people who so far have had anything like that, of course, have been populists like Donald Trump. So there's been an association. So they're against the old elites. So there's an association with the in the elite mind of this thing is basically the tool of the people that don't like us, that want to overthrow our system in which we have been successful. And we've all gone to the right universities and we all use the same words. We all have the same opinions. And here comes this completely different. And then, of course, the words start to get used like authoritarian and fascist and this and that and the other, racist. And so out of virtue, out of trying to save democracy, I have to stifle your speech. That's, of course, totally bogus. That nothing that is being said today in public is equal to what was being said in the American press back in the year 1800 when Thomas Jefferson and John Adams were going at it for the presidency. I mean, that was a wild, wild show. And we seem to have survived our democracy just fine.
But I guess there's this sense where in the 20th century paradigm, where the institutions were strong and had public confidence, they could afford to be more generous in a weird way. That, you know, it's okay to be liberal and allow people to disagree with you and allow embarrassment in the public square if you feel confident about your position of power. Whilst now, as those institutions are being challenged all the time, they're almost becoming more authoritarian. They're trying to, they have less appetite for dissent even than the 20th century.
I actually don't agree with that. I think in the olden days, the elites disputed with each other. Of course, elite opinion varied. They're not a gigantic monolith. And they were less so then because of the reasons you've given than now. But we're talking about something entirely different. We're talking about voices from below. And there were no voices from below in those days. All you had, I mean, you could look at your television. And here in the U.S., we had three channels. And, you know, your politician, a president, could give a speech. And if you were angry by the speech, all you could do was yell at your TV, and he wasn't going to hear you, okay? So what is different is not that that there are fewer opinions, which I think there are, and there's a tremendous conformity, because when you're frightened, you huddle together, and the elites are terribly frightened. But the fact that this upsurge of opinions that have nothing to do with what the elites want to talk about, the elites want to talk about things like global warming, you know, everything that the elites want to talk about seems to end up in, well, we get more control, right? You know, how do you control the automobile, build more bike lanes? And the people want, you know, a good economy. They want to be heard. They're concerned about immigration. All the things that the public seems to be concerned about, the elite is very, they just don't want to go there.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Do not want to go there. So they're having the agenda stolen from them, and they resent that very deeply.
So where do you see it going from here? I mean, what you see it almost as a battle between the elite and the voices from the ground, as you call them. If that competition carries on getting more and more stark like this, and the elites are trying to clamp down more authoritarian, and there are more and more uprisings against them, where does it end up?
Information structures, okay, are basically, they set the stage. They have tremendous effects. They set the stage, and they arrange the props for the human drama, okay? And we have just had this tremendous change in the information structure. We are at the very early days of a, you know, colossal transformation that is going to take years. You are young enough that you may see the end of it. I can guarantee you that I will not. All right. So when you ask me what is it that we're headed for, I would turn that around and say, we have to make sure that we are clear about the things we want to keep when we get to the end of this transformation. And among the things that I, of course, find near and dear, having been born in Cuba, is liberal democracy, which, when you think about the internet, and particularly this was much remarked on in the internet's idealistic early days, there is no reason why we could not be more democratic than we are today. When you look at the industrial age, which is when all our institutions were shaped, they are essentially anything that's hierarchical, which is what the principle for those institutions, they're very steeply hierarchical. That's not a particularly democratic structure. So there's room to improve that. But yeah, there's going to be a lot of turbulence. There's going to be a lot of bumps in the road. Every political question is going to get caught. It's not like this is the only question, the elites versus the public, but every question gets caught in that. You know, the fact that we had a pandemic, you would have thought that if anything could unify a nation or a community, it would be the fact that people were getting sick and dying. No, it got caught in the same kind of, it's them and it's us.
Let me take you back to something you said a little bit earlier about Jack Teixeira, this young guy who's going to be facing trial. When he made that oath, you said that maybe he wasn't even serious about it, or he didn't even have the faculties to understand what that oath was about in some way, because the things he was being asked to swear allegiance to, his country, the military, an oath before God not to share such a secret on pain of prosecution, etc., almost just didn't mean anything to his generation. I wonder if you could expand on that a bit more. It's almost like the internet has fragmented everything so much that these entities that usually across centuries have had so much power and people invested so much meaning in, like countries, like oaths before God, just sort of don't count for much anymore.
Yeah, the oath that you swear is to protect and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. It's pretty straightforward, okay? And I 100% agree with what you said. I think the Zoomers, who to me are fascinating specimens, because these kids were born with, they really were the first generation born with a smartphone in hand. Right. And they do spend hours upon hours online. And then, of course, a smartphone means that you're never detached from that world. When you go into the web, into the digital world, you become an entirely different thing than what you are here sitting in my room, you know, talking to you. You become decontextualized, you become ahistorical, you become flattened. Yourself. The digital self is very mutilated version of your real self, and it has no, I think it was L.M. Sakasa says, it has no moral, you know, imperative. In other words, I would never, even on Zoom, I would never start calling you names here, because there you are. You might meet up with me sometime and punch me in the nose, right? But I mean, online, that doesn't happen. You meet somebody and everything is fluid, and everything is open to whatever behaviors you want. So things like, you know, what is a nation? What is history? Where do I come from? That generation tends not only not to ask them, but to reject those questions as valid. Many of them feel that history is where bad things happened. Racism, for example, and sexism, and all kinds of bad things. So there's no point in going there. You can't learn from history. You can only repudiate it. Much of society, they feel the same way about. So what a young person like that might feel while swearing an oath to the Constitution, you know, to protect the Constitution, and what an oath even is, you know, because, I mean, I'm old enough that it really, you think about it, you know, you swear an oath, that's kind of like getting married, right? You know, nobody gets married just like, okay, whatever, you know, you think about it. You think, is this the one, okay? So this is the same kind of thing. You're making a lifetime commitment that you were going to have a certain kind of behavior regarding, you know, this world of secrets, and they're demanding that you protect that Constitution. And it's not up to you to interpret it. And I think that's another difference is, you know, we are, those of us who grew up earlier, accept the hierarchy, right? The hierarchy has stamped this top secret. Therefore, even though it's a silly paper, and believe me, there are so many top secret material that it's just ridiculously trivial, right? Reams of that, okay? But that doesn't matter. You treat it as what it is. Whereas if you are born in this much more equitable, you know, internet flat world, it's like, well, I decide. I decide what's top secret. I decide what's important. And look, guys, you know, look what I just saw and some classified server, and the urge to share with a community, an online community, is again another thing that didn't exist before. So, I just think that the psychology of young people raised online is radically different from the rest of us who are. We're spared that trial because it's an ordeal.
It's going to make governing the world quite difficult, isn't it? Or at least how we organize our societies. Because if your online self, which, as you say, people now spend 7 hours or more as each day, is completely unrecognizable to your physical manifested self, you know, what entities are we going to arrange government around? I mean, behind you on the wall, you have a map of the world, which looks like the kind of map we're all familiar with for the past many decades, which is countries in different colors. They have straight lines or wiggly lines. And those units of countries are how we organize things. And if you swear an oath of loyalty to your country, you kind of understand what that is. Whilst if this new generation is just so invested in this much more anarchic online world, they may feel more loyal to an online community than they do to their country. Do you think it's as profound as that, that the map behind you is going to be fundamentally challenged by this new era?
Oh, I think it already is. I would never bet against the power and the staying power of the nation state, but I have had friends who are smarter than me who do have great doubts about the staying power of the nation state. I don't really know where that is headed, but every change smart politicians and statesmen must adapt to. I mean, look, I'm gonna really give myself away. When I was a young kid, that map out there was filled with these kind of pink red areas all over the world. You know what that was? That was the British Empire, all right? So well, the British Empire is gone, right? Britain is dealt with that. The British political world has somehow survived that. We survived the end of the Cold War. I think we need a better elite class. Okay, if you want to push me again to the wall, and what the solution here is, we have a reactionary elite class. These are people who want to go back to the way things were. I don't understand and don't like the fact that these new communications devices are empowering so many people to say things that they disagree with. You need people who, I mean, we had politicians who learned to use television, right? That was a new thing. And when you look at early politicians in television, they look wooden. But then Jack Kennedy came and he was like a star, right? I mean, you had somebody who not only was good on television, he was riveting, right? He was like a performer. And we will get, I think, eventually, politicians who can deal with this world, get in there, and in that strange sort of half world of the internet, be able to persuade people to behave in governable ways in the material world.
Mm. Do you see anyone who fits that bill coming up? Is there any names that come to mind of people you think who get it?
I mean, the people who have gotten it so far have been the populists. I think Trump got it. Trump, this weird boomer, just had Twitter down pat, and built an entire modality of political following strictly on his ability to troll the other side into getting outraged, coming at him, and then people would stand behind him who disagreed with the other side, but didn't necessarily love Trump, right? So he manipulated that wonderfully. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I had hopes for. I don't like the politics of either of those people, but she seems to have kind of like she's moved up to being an elite now. It's the way it looks like to me. But when she first came on, she had, for example, she would have Instagrams of her doing her nails or something like that. But she was a human being. The thing about the web is you can't be some pompous person wearing a toga with laurel wreaths on your head and some rhetorical posture. You're just you. You're just you. And so there's something about you, your personality, that persuades, right? And in the old days, I mean, if you read a newspaper article, even today, but certainly the old kind where there was a view from nowhere, or you listen to a television anchor person like here in the States, Walter Cronkite, they wrote and they spoke like nobody alive. They just had this weird institutional way of communicating. That doesn't work online. It does not work online. You are you. So it's going to be people who use their personal appeal to persuade online. It can happen. It will happen. It has to happen. Now, whether these will be good people working on behalf of democracy or destructive people working to tear down democracy to further their own positions, that's up to us. We're the voters.
You talk about democracy and earlier liberal democracy. A key part of that is the idea of some kind of neutral institutions, isn't it? That eventually we accept election results because there's going to be some fair institutions that sort them out. We accept judicial results because we think the judiciary is neutral enough. It's a key part of a liberal democracy. And now what we're seeing with all of this culture war and the kind of online battles you're talking about is that people don't trust the institutions anymore, either from the right or from the left. And the institutions are becoming partisan. Do you have any hope that we're going to get back to a world with neutral institutions that like are trusted across society, or is that just a pipe dream now?
I think it was a pipe dream then. I don't think they were ever neutral. I think every institution has its own, believe me, I was inside CIA, and they have their own axis grinding. They have their own internal, what they say their mission is never really what they're doing inside, you know. And I don't mean that in some evil conspiratorial way. I just mean that in an organizational way. They are organizationally very selfish. Every organism, that includes all organizations, wants to survive and to thrive, and sometimes it means at the expense of others. Before, the appearance of neutrality existed. Because why? Because the people who thought that it wasn't neutral weren't heard, right? And I think that's gone forever. And I think that's a good thing. I think we can live with the fact that every human judgment is going to be biased in some sense. As long as we don't pick up guns and start shooting at each other because we're in disagreement. And let's be clear, that hasn't happened yet and doesn't look like likely to happen. I know there was a lot of strange talk about Trump and insurgency and this and that and the other. But I mean, having lived in Cuba and having lived through a couple of coups, not only in Cuba, but when I was posted in Asuncion, Paraguay, I can tell you, you know, Donald Trump could never have managed an insurgency. The entire institutional world was against him, even while he was president. He could tweet. That's about what he could do, okay?
So you think it's a good thing then? I mean, I'm enjoying this because it's a much more sort of optimistic view of this, that we shouldn't be tearing our hair out or clutching pearls, that it's the end of a beautiful era. You actually think people are waking up in a sense and that we're going to get a more savvy, wiser demos who can actually kind of make decisions for themselves.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll be wiser, but we'll be more realistic about the structure and quality of our institutions. I mean, like I said, this has happened before in this country, my country. When John Adams lost to Jefferson, he did not stick around for the inaugural. He went home in despair, thinking the American democracy was finished. All right. So that never happened. And I feel like pretending that our institutions are these Olympian decision machines, that they consult with the experts, they wisely debate the major points and come to some consensus agreement that is the best for the country, that has never happened and never will happen as long as we are human beings and not Olympian gods. And even the Olympian gods tended to fight with each other a lot, okay? So I feel we have a more realistic approach to our institutions. The immediate reaction has been, I think, understandably, a collapse in trust. So now we have to rebuild the constitutions on the principles of, it's not going to be like before, where we believe them to be Olympian, you know, and scientific and whatnot. It's going to be the way we are now, which is we disagree, maybe sometimes vehemently, but in the end, the decision has to be made. And as long as we don't pick up guns and start shooting, we're okay.
It's a big if, but we'll take it. Thank you so much, Martin, and thank you for your thoughts today.
I had fun.
That was Martin Gurry, the writer, thinker, and former CIA analyst. His book, The Revolt of the Public and the Crisis of Authority, that was actually published back in 2014 and predicted, although he's modest about it and won't accept it, a lot of the events that happened in 2016 and beyond. To get his view on the crisis of authority happening right now, literally this week, as huge numbers of highly classified documents are leaked online by a 21-year-old kid called Jack Teixeira, was really interesting. And I think the optimistic note he ended on was unusual. We get quite a few people on this show saying that there's nothing to hope for and we're headed for darkness. Good to have a slightly different take. Thank you to Martin, and thanks to you for tuning in. This was Unheard.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.